step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin.
Welcome into the show. Just getting some logistical things sorted out before we started. So if you saw me walking across the camera as the show began, that's the reason. Normally that's a Lance thing as the show starts, but hey, it happens more often than him though. To him though, let's be clear. It's receipt pulling time for one Dana Brown, and people are looking into the differences between what he said like a week ago about Jose Abreu and what he's saying now. And really that all stems from the fact that the Astros are terrible. You can start to pull receipts about what the general manager said and differences between statements because it's better than focusing on the baseball team because it was another awful night. They go to New York and now all of a sudden, at least regular season wise, the Yankees own them. Justin Verlander, part of a pitching staff that gave up 10 consecutive runs after Kyle Tucker gave the Astros a lead early. It didn't matter. The Yankees took that lead right back and ran away with it. Home runs after home runs, mislocation after mislocation. We'll hear from Verlander on his performance, and as you might imagine, he didn't think he pitched very well, and he discussed what's next for him as he tries to get back to a level where we're still talking about him as one of the best pitchers, maybe not in the league, but certainly one of the best pitchers on the staff. Because despite even a good performance in his last outing, he wasn't the normal Verlander. Maybe that's just age. Maybe at some point we should expect the performance to just start to slip away. What last night wasn't a slip away. It's like it fell off a cliff. But overall, just to expect things to get a little worse and worse. And surely, if you thought the Astros weren't going to be good this year, if you had those thoughts, you thought it would be a slow burn as opposed to falling off the cliff that it has, And Verlander last night, he was, you know, we expect Verlander to give up an early home run because he challenges people. He wants to work high in the zone, and that happens. It just kept happening. For different reasons last night as the Yankees pounded him. And Espada left him out there, thought this guy could eat up some innings and stay in it. He ate up some innings, but he could not keep his team in the game, partly because they decided one run was going to be enough for the night until it was 10-1, and then they scored a couple runs late when the game was well out of reach. So the Yankees have dominated the Astros this year. And Justin Verlander hasn't pitched the whole year. We know he was working himself back from a spring training. I wouldn't call it an injury, but a little speed bump. He's working himself back, and you know he started late, but the numbers since he's been back, not great. Your human eyes are telling the truth because the numbers back him up. Since he's been back, 10 walks, 15 strikeouts in his first 22 and a third innings, 34 whiffs on 187 swings taken. His whiff rate is at 18.1%, which is lower than it was last year by over 4% and lower than it was in 2022, the World Series winning season, by over 6%. So the decline, if you see that happening, the numbers say you're right. So Verlander, not good last night. We'll hear from him. But really, it's not the object of my ire because I don't really fault Dana Brown for much because some of the issues, particularly the ones he discussed that people take issue with, are a player that he didn't acquire. He didn't have a say. the Jose Abreu conversation, despite him being away from the team and Sean asserting that he was a bit of a mush and created bad vibes. And maybe Sean's right. Who am I to say that Sean's wrong? I could say it, but I don't know. I don't know. I can't say that he's wrong.
Who knows?
I don't know if Jose Abreu was creating the bad vibes, but he's no longer around. The Astros certainly haven't taken off since he's been gone. But Dana Brown doing interviews, being available to the media, that would be my first thing to Dana Brown. No longer be available. Like, you want to pull like what NBA GMs do? You only talk a couple times before the season begins and after the season begins. I would think that would benefit you greatly. I guess he does a show on 790 every week. I believe that's the case. I would cut that off right now. Or I would say, look, don't ever ask me any questions about Jose Abreu anymore, because I stumble over myself and I make myself sound silly depending on the week. People have pulled the receipts. We've played the audio last time about how he talked about, nah, it's not a swing. He's not slow. It's a timing. We're sending him down the floor to get his timing back. Now, well, I'll let you hear it. Sean, if you can grab the Dana Brown comments on Jose Abreu, because we went from the scouting says he still has it, we just need to get the timing right, to this, where apparently the man's been lifting too many weights.
Yeah, it's a spring training complex. So, you know, we got him down here with some of our hitting guys, and the day-to-day is we're going to work on the rhythm and the timing. And we're also going to do some, you know, strength and conditioning. You know, a lot of times with these guys, they get into the heavy weight, the lifting, the strength building. We're going to do lighter weights, more rep, more quick twitch things in terms of weights and moving a little bit faster so that, you know, he can get back to the quick twitch. I think he's gotten a little too strong and it slowed his back down a little bit. And so ultimately, if we can get this guy back to his rhythm and timing and back to what he did last fall, it's going to really help us out.
So the bat is too slow. The bat speed is slower than it should be. Not just simply a timing thing. And what I've learned is Jose Abreu is too buff to play baseball. He's too strong. He's in the weight room too much. And now he's too strong to swing the bat.
We've never seen someone as muscular as Jose Abreu play baseball.
Of course, there was a time period in baseball where all the big buff dudes were swinging the bat pretty well. Been hitting a lot of homers. Now,
the bat speed was slow.
Was it? Was yeah, Sammy the Sosa's balls, bat speed really slow?
The balls
really
are
slow?
Going 500 feet. But
yeah, the bat speed was slow. Okay. Now, you could say, well, that was medically enhanced strength. Jose Abreu's doing it all naturally, and that's why he's not able to hit the baseball anymore. He's too strong and the bat speed is slow, which is in direct opposition to what was said earlier. This is what I'm saying. If I'm Dana Brown, don't ask me any more questions. I'm not available anymore, because generally, whether it be Click for the short amount of time he was a GM here before, you know, you won a World Series and you got to go, or Jeff Luhnow, who had a longer run, no matter what nonsense you said, it would be covered up by the team's great. Like, you could say anything and no one's going to care, because they watch the team on the field and they're awesome. So you could say this dumbest thing ever. Now, there are going to be some people who dissect everything someone says and pick apart it. But for the most part, Jeff Luhnow said things and you're like, yeah, you know what? You're right, Jeff. Why is he right? Because we're in the middle of another playoff run. James Click, for that time that you were the Astros general manager, yeah, you're right, James. Why is he right? Because the team is on the path to winning another World Series. Dana Brown doesn't have that cover. It's either discuss getting your ass kicked 10-3 by the Yankees or pick apart the GM and his statements. It makes you feel better to pick apart the GM and his statements, because you can find reasons why what he's saying makes no sense to you. For the most part, no one can understand what has happened to this team. It's not logical. This decline, this immediate and this steep, doesn't make a lot of sense to people. So you know what you can do? Man, I didn't even like Dana Brown anyway. What's he said? All right, I got something for you, Dana Brown. Let me put these two clips side by side and we go see and put the eyeball emojis up and go.
The math ain't mathin'. Yeah. Drop a math ain't mathin'.
It's very easy to get after Dana Brown right now, because, I mean, how much time can we spend talking about Alex Bregman now being under 200 as a hitter?
Yeah.
Well, we'll spend some time because the numbers are uglier than that. But comparing his starts, because we know slow starts. Al Bregman starts slow. This start is even slower than his slowest starts as far as being an Astro. But you know what? I got you, Dana Brown. I got a way for you to avoid all this and put the focus back on the team. Never speak again. Never talk again until after the season's over.
Don't show your face in this town again. until the Astros are over 500.
I'm just trying to prevent him being slandered on Twitter. Don't, because you got your randoms, you got your news people, you've got a host here, you've got everyone pointing out the difference in your explanation about why Jose Abreu is struggling. I would stop talking about Jose. Fine. If you don't want to disappear, maybe you like the attention. Maybe you like speaking to the media. I don't know why you would. Things are terrible. I can't imagine he likes answering questions. Don't ever talk about Jose Abreu. I don't know how. Look, I'm not talking about him. He's not a part of the roster right now. That's what I would say.
I'm focused on the 26 guys on the field.
We're talking about the Major League Club right now. When Jose Abreu is back, we'll talk about him. You guys don't ask me about any other player who's not around. Where's the Pedro Leon questions? Can I get some of those? He's hitting home runs. Let's talk about him. Or Joey Loperfido. Remember when he was hitting it on the minor league level? You guys asked all those questions. Keep asking me about guys who are actually playing baseball games, not a guy in Florida working on some things.
I have a J.P. France injury update.
Yeah,
huh?
You guys want to talk about that?
Anyone? No?
He'll be out for a little while.
Huh?
You guys want, huh? Anyone? Anyone? Anyone interested? Nah. Keep asking me about a guy I didn't even want to sign. That would be me. I'd be like 50. F me. What do you say F me for? I didn't want to bring you here. I wasn't even a part of that.
That's when you know that James Click or Dana Brown is very close to getting fired. Once he goes like, "Well, I didn't sign Jose Abreu."
Look, that wasn't my decision.
You ask whoever signed that bozo.
As long as he's out there, that bozo. As long as he's out there taking the bullets for the Jose Abreu signing, you know he's okay. The minute he goes. Not me.
I inherited this mess.
Yeah. I'm not the problem. He's not my decision. Then we know he's in trouble. So we'll continue to dissect, I guess, what happened last night. We will hear from Verlander. He had some introspective things about what happened last night. But, man, oh, man. If you thought – look, I don't walk into or approach Astros games with the thought that things are going to go well. Not at this point. But I thought Justin Verlander would give us a little bit more. I thought that game would be something that would hold my interest before, you know, by about 7:30. The games, it was an early start, 6:05. But by what, 7, maybe 6:40? Well, this game's over. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe an honorable, like 5-3 loss.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know.
Yeah, even when he gave up the homer in the when he gave up the runs in the first inning. Okay, this is Verlander. He struggles sometimes early. We'll keep it moving. He'll find a way to recover, and maybe the bats will get going. None of what I hoped happened. None of it happened. The bats didn't get going. He didn't find his way, and it just resulted in another Yankees beating. The Astros have suffered at the hands of the Yankees all year long, and it continued. So why wouldn't the beginning of the year that I guess should have warned us what was to come, considering how the Astros have owned the Yankees. Why shouldn't that have been a predictor of things to come? It was out of character for them to get swept by the Yankees to start the year, and everything since has been out of character. But at this point, we just assume this is who they are. So the Astros go down to start the series, and this show's approach of I'm leaving here with something didn't get off to a good start. We approached this series with, we want to leave here with something. And we just assume if they were going to lose that series, Verlander would be the something we took. They would at least win that game. Nah. Now we got to depend on Arrigetti tonight and then Blanco, which I feel better about in game three of the series. So far, you've left everything. You haven't taken anything with you. But another opportunity tonight. I'll give you some of Bregman's numbers when we come back. Just a hint. They're not great. And we'll also hear from Justin Verlander on what went wrong for him in last night's game. We're just getting started here. We'll get into what happened in the NBA. It was a pedestrian night, certainly nothing compared to what happened on Monday. And we have some news about another defensive player of the year for a certain player. And also, Jamal Murray. Did he get fined? Did he get suspended? We'll talk about that as well. First segment out of the way. I almost said in the books, but I said out of the way. I caught myself. First segment out of the way. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Sean and I are discussing what Jamal Murray could have done to get suspended. If you missed it, he got fined $100K, but did not get suspended despite like three incidents that together. They didn't kick Rudy Gobert out for a game or suspend him for a game after he did the money sign. They fined him. But you put all three together, throwing the heat pack, throwing the towel, doing the money symbol, you would think after a preponderance of incidents that they would have got him for a game. But, you know, they don't want to affect the playoff series by suspending a star player. I get it. And I'm not his ops. I don't care that he's available. I was just surprised that he didn't get a game because of all the things he did. He was shook by what the Wolves are doing. So Jamal Murray will be available in game three as the Nuggets try to avoid going down 0-3 against the Wolves. But yeah, just a suspension. So a hit to the face. If he nails Mark Davis with the heat pack in the face, he's out.
Back of the head.
Yeah, because he wasn't looking. In the back of the head, or the towel hits him. If there's contact from a projectile, does he get suspended? Because Steph Curry has thrown a mouthpiece before in a playoff game and into the crowd and been...
He got ejected. Or no, actually, that might have been after a sixth foul anyway. I think he might have just got fouled out.
Yeah, and he didn't miss a game.
No, he didn't get thrown out because that happened in game six of the 2016 finals.
Yeah.
And he did not get suspended for game seven of the finals.
They do not want to. And yeah, obviously. They do not want to affect the playoff game by suspending guy unless they have to. So I imagine he would have had to actually make contact. And even then, he would have probably been thrown out at that point in the game. And then they would have said, that's enough. He was suspended because I think that stuff happened, in the first half maybe? At least maybe the heat pack happened in the first half?
Yeah, I think it was the second quarter.
Yeah, so they would have said that's enough time. It's enough punishment. So he doesn't, as much as the talk is about crooked refs or the NBA wants a certain team in a series or in the finals, I think their main goal is to not be looked at as a league who will get star players out of here and really affect the playoff series and determine an outcome and a winner. Look, the Draymond thing goes now way back in that same series that Sean mentioned, and he kicked the guy, and it was more about the flagrant, right?
Well, it was because he had accumulated so many flagrant fouls over the course of the playoffs, and that was definitely a flagrant foul, yes. So they couldn't, like, rescind it.
Yes.
So he had to get suspended.
So Draymond had been better, you know, he had a better conduct record going into that game. The flagrant would have occurred and he would have been available.
If he
wouldn't have missed game six.
If he didn't kick Steven Adams
game five.
In the groin, if he didn't body slam Michael Beasley in the first round of the Rockets series for no reason because they won in, I think they won in four or five. Then he, at the end of one of the games, he just like slammed Michael Beasley to the floor and got a flagrant two or flagrant one.
And, just because he wanted to.
Yeah. And that ended up like whatever, a month and a half later, getting him suspended for game five of the finals.
Just have proper conduct, Draymond, and you would have missed time.
Just do like two of them.
Two of those things. We'll give you a couple. But you get to a certain point where we have to suspend you because the rules stated, you know, if you step on a floor in the middle of an altercation that you weren't involved in, you'll miss a playoff game like Amari Stoudemire did that Sean pointed out. They've actually pulled back how stringent they are on that stuff.
Yeah.
As long as you're not escalating the conflict, they're not looking to kick you out of a game. And the Suns are like, all right, where was that de-escalation of the rules when we had a chance to go win a title?
Nice rule change.
Yes, appreciate it.
We had to start Boris Diaw in a game six.
We appreciate you for your efforts, but it certainly didn't help us. But Jamal Murray will, at least if he, for Nuggets fans' sake, will be available, and hopefully he's healthier because I think the bigger issue is that man's calf, I believe, is the issue. Has restricted his ability to play at the level the Nuggets need. He's not been good the first two games, and it has shown through his frustration and his play. When you only make three shots and you got ESPN personalities taking shots at you at a defending champion, yeah, he's got to play better. The Nuggets are not going to have a shot anyway, even if he is available. So that's how that played out. The other thing, as far as that series is concerned, Rudy Gobert didn't play in Game 2, but he did win Defensive Player of the Year. That's now 4. And if you didn't think Rudy Gobert was a Hall of Famer, well, just pack it up. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. You win 4 of those, they're going to put you in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame, or the Basketball Hall of Fame, excuse me, because there's not a lot you actually have to do to make it. But if you are deemed the best defensive player in the NBA for 4 years, it's just a pathway into the Hall of Fame.
If you're tied for the most defensive player of the years of all time,
if you're nearly a record breaker,
you're gonna make it.
So Rudy Gobert eventually will be in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and people still will be saying he's overrated. He shouldn't be there. The Rudy Gobert thing, I get the issues when it happens in the playoffs and he's getting played off the floor. I get why you might think, no way, he's as good as what the media thinks he is. But the counter is the traffic cones in front of him in Utah were the problem. He's not getting played off the floor in these playoffs. And we talked about the guys on the perimeter for the T-Wolves make a big difference. There's a big difference between Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Anthony Edwards versus Donovan Mitchell and Royce O'Neal.
Joe Ingles.
And Joe Ingles, yeah. Oof. When Joe Ingles trying to play defense in front of you. Yeah. It's different. And he's benefited from it. And he goes on and wins a 4th. Rudy Gobert. Mr. COVID. At least some people gave him that moniker. As if it was his fault that COVID happened. Oh, the NBA got shut down because of Rudy Gobert. No, it didn't. If Rudy Gobert didn't exist, the NBA was going to take a pause. But people had smoke for Rudy Gobert.
I don't know. I think they would have been the only sports league to keep playing.
Yep. You're right.
If only he didn't touch those microphones.
Yeah, as long as he didn't make that stupid joke, the NBA would have carried on and the Lakers wouldn't have won a title because we know they only won because of the bubble. Think about that. If not for Rudy Gobert and his lack of care for the health of everyone, LeBron would have gone through how many years in L.A. without a title, and the haters would have had one more talking point.
Michael Jordan would still be the GOAT if he didn't touch
the microphone. Let's not play that game. I don't want to get into the
what?
Who's the best player of all time? I don't want to do it.
You don't?
Nope.
Who do you think though?
Not doing it. Not doing it. You've never met a person in that conversation whose mind's been changed. It never happens. Even remove the Michael LeBron thing. Go find a conversation when the best ever is being discussed, or this person's better than this person. When has a person who feels a certain way ever had their mind changed? It's never happened. Not in a barbershop, not on a talk show, not standing in line for something, for the game. It's never happened. You've never convinced someone else you're right and they're wrong.
Until today. So.
No, not. Do you think eight straight finals
no. appearances.
No. It's not going to convince anyone who's not already convinced.
Leading point scorer. It's an empty.
I hear it. I've heard the numbers. I've heard the arguments. It's never changed anyone's mind. Because I was going to say, if you've ever had your mind changed on this issue, call in. But no, because then it's just going to start the whole conversation. I don't want to be involved in it. I don't want to be involved in it because it's a pointless one. No one ever wins. It just goes on and on and on. And some people would say, hey, where's Kobe?
That is a good point. Where is Kobe?
Well, I know where he is, but as far as where he exists in the conversation, probably not mentioned enough. But I don't want to get into it. And, of course, our first call of the day is probably about this or a joke about this. So we'll see as we head to our next break. We didn't get to the Verlander stuff because I got distracted by our in-break conversation regarding Jamal Murray. We'll get to the Verlander stuff, what his take is on why he struggled in the game against the Yankees last night. We'll also hear from this caller, no matter what it's about, I guess. We are a couple segments in, and we're going to talk more about the Astros, which is, Keith wants to talk about the Astros. So maybe it is about Verlander and his struggles, or maybe the Astros overall. If you want to talk about the Astros or anything else, 713-780-3776. Sean and I will take your calls on anything and everything except Julian because you're banned until Friday. We'll be back.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. I didn't even ask Sean if this is the real Keith, because it's always up for debate. But Keith wants to talk with the Astros. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Delvincito. Que pasa? Buenos dias. The Astros suck right now, man. What do you think the chances of Ryan? Olivia Cook doing stuff on the internet? Let's go.
Yeah, as soon as he said the Astros suck right now, I knew it was Ryan. Olivia Cook, is she the House of Dragons star? She's part of Team Green? Is that who he's referring to? I think that's who he's talking about.
I don't know the name.
I believe that's who he's talking about. She's the queen mother, I guess you'd call her at this point.
Okay, so a star of an HBO show is the question?
Yes, he's asking if a 30-year-old woman who is the star of an HBO show that's... I don't know what her character's fate is, if she's going to die in this season or not, but she's got a real shot, considering how popular the show is. As long as she's not written out by, you know, George R.R. Martin from years ago, she could be around for years on this show if it plays out that way. I'm going to say, and she's English? Nah.
What does that have to do with
it? I'm talking about her sensibilities, and mostly because I've seen her in interviews and stuff. She doesn't appear to be the type. I'm going to say maybe one of my lowest percentages. I'm going to give you, Ryan, 0.01.
Wow. That really doesn't get that much lower.
I got to add more zeros, I think, to get lower than that. You've picked the wrong one, Ryan. Just enjoy her in this show until she dies or doesn't die. I don't know what her fate is. As far as maybe it's a violent death, maybe she dies of old age. I don't know. But just enjoy her in House of Dragon, which comes back in about 5 weeks now.
Hey, it's HBO, so, you know, you might get to see some stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, she's not married anymore because the old man who was the king is dead.
But wasn't that weird scene with the
feet guy?
Yeah.
I don't know if she's going to be. I think he just likes feet. I don't know.
Well, if Ryan also likes feet, then boom.
Problem solved. Hasn't she always had like socks on?
You know what? I need to rewatch.
Yeah, go rewatch the feet scenes and report back, and see where
House of the Dragon feats.
Are you going to do that on the company computer? Or are you going to do that when you get home? I got my laptop, but I'm not searching that. Ryan, unlikely for you. I just don't think it's in the cards. But once again, you can try. But I don't think that the queen, Allison Hightower, is going to show up on OnlyFans. In fact, by the time it would be an opportunity for her, maybe OnlyFans doesn't exist anymore. She's 30. She's got plenty of time to act. She may not be a thing for you. You may need to adjust. I tell you, Ryan, influencers, that's your bag. Get obsessed with one of them, and the likelihood of them showing up on OnlyFans is high. But not a star of an HBO show. Not this current HBO show. Maybe if it was like Real Sex 25, you've got her shot. House of the Dragon? Really low. Didn't want to get to this before I got distracted by the fake Astro stuff. Justin Verlander pitched last night. Didn't pitch well. And he was introspective on his performance. He knows there are some things he needs to correct, but he did also credit the Yankees for the plan they had and how they got to him in their game last night.
They had a good approach, and I wasn't very good. If I'm being really honest with myself, I think like the last, you know, couple of games probably, particularly the walks kind of showed me I was a little off, and then sometimes it takes you facing a team that knows you intimately and vice versa to send you back to the drawing board. You know, I think, these guys show me today that I got some work to do. I got to be more deceptive.
Three home runs given up, five innings, eight hits, seven earned runs. And the more deceptive thing is the thing that at least the comment that gets to me, because it might suggest, and he may recognize that, hey, I don't have the stuff anymore just to, my stuff's better than you, and I'm going to win this way. I got to have a better plan. I got to be more deceptive. He's older. It's going to happen. It has to happen. Just like this run at some point was bound to come to an end. Justin Verlander being a plus number one starter, that couldn't continue. Even if you were hoping that at least he'd get through the rest of this contract and maybe he'd walk off into the sunset still being a top line starter, I think you're hoping for too much. I think he's going to be good, but not great anymore. And now this outing was awful, start to finish. He wasn't good, but maybe he is realizing that I can't do what I used to do. And I'm sure he has done things in the past to account for a bit of a fall off. But maybe now we're at a point where he has to do more. The more deceptive thing got to me. It just suggests that he might be aware that the stuff ain't going to be what it was, and I got to get guys out in a different way. Maybe it results in less home runs given up early because we're not challenging guys all the time. We're not working up in the zone anymore. You certainly have to hope so, because what happened last night it won't be the norm, but it can't be something where this particular guy on this particular team is one that can't be depended on. Because if he's one of those guys again, just forget about the rest of the season. If you can't even depend on Verlander to be a guy who can get you six, and even if he's giving up three, it's just another in the line of guys that have not lived up to the expectations of this year.
Yeah, I don't think we're expecting him to be like Cy Young winner, no. Justin Verlander, like he has been in the past. But you can't be Celtic Shaq. You know, you can't be completely.
You can't be the guy who cosplays you. You can't be Hunter Brown. You can't be.
I was going with washed up, but yeah, we could also.
You can't be the guy who wants to be you, and clearly isn't right now. You can't be that guy. You got to be the guy he idolizes, not the guy he looks at in the mirror.
Do you think Hunter Brown is in the dugout being like, you know what? I am like my goat.
I reached the level.
Or has Major League Baseball figured out Justin Verlander, and by proxy, they've also figured out Hunter Brown?
Maybe they figured out Hunter Brown.
And then they've used their book approach.
Yeah, and used that approach on Justin Verlander.
Just Verlander's like, God, you ruined it for me.
Yeah, stop it. Knock it off. I was getting guys out because they didn't have a plan, and now you've given them the plan. I don't think that's the case. I just think he had a bad outing. Let's just hope that's what it is. We'll hear from Verlander a little bit later in the show because he had some more thoughts on his performance and the work he has to do. Let's just hope the plan he has in place, or the one he's going to put in place to get right, is one that works. You can't have him being a guy you can't depend on, because if you want to look at another guy who has sorely disappointed, it's Alex Bregman. And Dana Brown talked about Alex Bregman. He did his weekly thing on 790, which I have advised him to stop doing, because anything he says is going to be something people crush. But he talked about Alex Bregman. Well, and he called Alex Bregman the guy who kind of gets it started. He thinks he's the guy in that clubhouse. When Alex goes, the team goes. So he's putting a lot on Bregman and suggesting that, I guess he's the, if you are a soccer fan, it's called the talisman. The talisman is how everything revolves around this person. And when they're going right, the team is going right. And if they don't go right, then the team is in the dumps. And Alex Bregman, apparently, at least according to Dana Brown, is that guy. I didn't suspect that to be the case. I didn't think that was him. But Alex Bregman is that guy. And this is what Dana Brown said. He needs to get hot. He's our veteran. This is courtesy of Brian LaLima at BLima 790. He's our veteran. The team will roll when Bregman rolls. He will get hot. Mark my word. He's an important piece, and he needs to get hot. He does team building for us in the clubhouse. What, like trust falls? What's he mean by that? That's the guy, according to Dana Brown. So now we know who to blame for everything. Alex Bregman, Dana Brown told us he's the guy. Well, I don't know who the vocal leader in that clubhouse anymore. That's been a conversation about leakage as far as guys continue to leave. Not many guys who were there at the beginning remain. No, Altuve, we don't suspect he's a vocal leader. He leads by example. We're not sure, but that's kind of the indication. Other than him, Alex Bregman is the other guy, and Justin Verlander. Those are the three who you can point to and say they've got the two titles. Those are the guys we'll lean on. They know what it took, and they know what it takes to win over the course of this run. And apparently, Alex Bregman's the guy that gets them going. Well, considering he's batting under 200, Dana Brown might be right. I don't know if they follow his lead, but what are they, 12-23 now? And he's batting under 200. It does correlate if we're to believe what Dana Brown is saying. So, Alex Bregman, you need to pick it up. I'll give you the numbers for Alex Bregman when we come back, and then we'll move on to other things because an hour of Astros talk, the way this Astros team is playing, I got to imagine they'll get to you. So, the numbers for Alex Bregman when we come back, and then we'll get to something else. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
These numbers, I believe, courtesy of Adam Wexler regarding Alex Bregman. A lot of the stuff we lean into when we try to convince ourselves that everything's going to be okay with him are the slow starts. We know he's a slow starter. Never starts a season well. Maybe not never, but generally never is up to the level we expect him to be once the season gets going. He gets there, and we're happy with his performances. Generally, it's just the month of April. Not good. It's been his way. Go back to 2017. To OPS 764, 2018 760, 2019 it was really good to start. 976, 857 in 2021, COVID year not mentioned. 2022, 757, and last year 643. So, not awful in some of the years. And this is up to the month of May, and specifically May 8th, which is where he enters today at. Today, his OPS, 535. So, Alex Bregman isn't just in the midst of a slow start. It's the worst start of his career. And is it simply because he's a guy who knows he's on the way out? I don't know. We had a tweeter, and he mentioned something I think was very interesting about this Astros team. And he just, maybe it's just where. A lot of high leverage situations over the last 7 years. And at some point, you need a reset year. And he's of the opinion that mental fatigue is part of this problem. And maybe it's a year that they have to work through. And eventually, once 2025 rolls around, I guess, they'll be okay. I think this team could look drastically different in 2025, considering the guys and their contracts. But maybe it's just a year where a lot of deep runs in the playoffs have worn on them. And this is a year where you're just going to chalk it up to it's just one of them.
They kind of had that year in 2020, although it was 60 games. I get why people forget it, but they were 28-31 or something, or 29-31. They were under 500.
Yeah,
that year. So it would make sense in like the same kind of cycle. Yeah, you know, that they kind of cycle in and out of this, but that also was only 60 games, and so we didn't know don't know how, if they played another 100 games after that, how it would have turned out. Also, playing 500 is way better than how they're playing right
now. They'd have to play really well the rest of the season to get up to 500 at this point. And yeah, they were a game under and found a way to get themselves to an ALCS. And weren't they like down 3-0, fought back to
Game 7.
So
yeah. Lost to Charlie Morton.
Yes, so we saw this team, even in a down year, have the fight to remind us of what they could be. We just haven't seen that so far. So it's an Astros season that we might be doing more autopsies as we go forward about individual players, but the team overall, maybe not dead, but the heartbeat is weak, And it certainly didn't get any stronger last night against the Yankees. And I mentioned moving on. Now, John McClain was in here yesterday. He does work for the Texans. And now that the NFL schedule is on the verge of being released, apparently reports are that it's going to be next week, maybe the 15th or the 16th. But nothing from actual sources you can trust, I guess. But there are sources close to people who think they know things say it's going to come next week or around maybe Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. So we'll see. But John McClain, who does stuff for the Texans right now, along with making appearances on this station, has his preferences as far as national televised games. That's been the big thing. No, the Texans have been relatively anonymous as far as outside of the city of Houston. People don't care about them because they haven't been good. Most of the talk has been more about them being a disaster. Not the case anymore. So now everyone's debating how many games they're going to get on national TV and who those opponents will be. John McClain's preferences in order are the Cowboys, Texas guy, I expected. And by the way, his stance, at least from yesterday, is he doesn't think holiday games qualify or the 325 games or 315 games, depending on what network you're on. He doesn't think those qualify as national games. He's talking about that Sunday night, the Monday night, the Thursday night stuff. Thursday night feels like prime time by default. We got to put a game there.
Thursday night's primetime junior.
Yeah, it's not really they've made a selection to put a big-time game there. It's just everyone has to do it once.
That's exactly what it is. Everyone gets a primetime game, and all the bad teams however many bad teams they are, we'll just throw them on Thursday night. That's your primetime. Pat on the head.
Yeah, and to show that it's not unfair, we'll punish the good teams with the Thursday night game, too. You'll get one, too, because everyone needs to get one. But his order are the Cowboys, the Bills, and that's some of the Diggs versus, both of them are Diggs. One of them's Diggs versus Diggs. The other's Diggs revenge game. And also Josh Allen, good quarterback to great quarterback. Lamar Jackson, he spoke about answering the beatdowns from last year and saying, hey, Texans need to prove that they can play with the Ravens. The Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes makes sense. Could be a playoff preview. And then he mentions the Packers because playing the Packers is cool.
He didn't in Lambeau, right?
I believe that game is in Lambeau. Yes, it is in Lambeau. So, Sean, going by John McClain's order and list, Cowboys, Bills, Ravens, Chiefs, and Packers. Let's say the Texans don't get 5 primetime games. Let's say they get 3. And you got to pick from this list, or maybe you can look at the schedule and pick a different game. But if I don't ask you to do that type of work, Cowboys, Bills, Ravens, Chiefs, and Packers, pick 3 out of the 5. And order them.
I would go Kansas City, I think, first, just because of would playing Dallas on Thanksgiving count as a
he doesn't consider that
a
primetime game.
So Thanksgiving as a primetime, but well,
he calls those holiday games.
So okay, I won't get too in the rabbit hole there.
I could be misquoting him, but that's what I remember.
Okay. If it's just a – yeah, give me the Chiefs, give me the Cowboys, and Baltimore in that order. As far as the top three goes. Chiefs, because of what you said, the Mahomes versus Stroudness of it. I also feel like it's pretty likely. I don't know.
It seems like that's going to happen.
It seems like it's an easy Sunday night game to make happen. So yeah, the Mahomes versus Stroud, the kind of the dynasty of the time versus the young team trying to get up to that level. Cowboys, obvious reasons. It's normally a pretty good game when they play each other. Now, it's like once every 4 years, but in 2020, I guess it's more recent than that now with the 17-game schedule, but they played in 2022, I want to say, and it was a very close game towards the end. 2018, I think, went to overtime, obviously, 2002. We all remember the 2002 game.
Of course.
Fresh in our memories. The Cowboys pretty clear. And then I like Baltimore as a matchup because it's a playoff rematch. That to me is more interesting than the Diggs versus – if it was the Buffalo game in Buffalo, but it's going to be at NRG, both these games would be at NRG.
Yeah, there's less interest for me that it's the Bills coming down the Houston.
Yeah, because it's not like the hostile environment. And I know that after the game, all the players are going to dap up.
Dap them up. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's like
– the conflict is what the fans might do.
Exactly. Like I don't – well, actually, I don't know how many Bills are still on the team. I was going to...
They've lost quite a few veterans, yeah.
Because I was going to go Micah Hyde and...
Jordan Poyer,
but I was like...
Not around.
I think they both got cut. Yep. Tre'Davious White, is he still around?
I don't think he's on the team either.
Okay, yeah. So all these guys that aren't on the team would dap him up at midfield anyway.
Yeah, maybe Deion Dawkins would dap him up.
Yeah. Do they still have Cole Beasley?
They might have to, depending on how their wide receiver core does. Tre'Davious White is now a Ram, so he wouldn't even be there to dap him up as they see each other across from each other. Now, the Diggs versus Diggs thing, whatever, doesn't mean that much to me because Stephon Diggs hasn't planted roots here yet, so I don't really care that he's facing his brother.
That's part of it, is that it's not...
And they like each other. They're brothers. It's not like they hate each other.
It's brother against brother, yeah, like the Civil War. Yeah,
it's nothing like it. If it was like it, I would be interested. But they actually like each other.
Yeah, I don't. The Diggs stuff, it is like it's through the lens of Stephon Diggs, someone who has yet to actually play a game for the Texans. So I get why Texans fans wouldn't be fired up for a Stephon Diggs-led storyline. Again, that isn't in Buffalo with him getting snowballs thrown at him. Like, that would take it to another level.
Yeah, Diggs in December in Buffalo, great. Great theater, particularly if there's something on the line there. I think I agree. I think Chiefs, number one for me. Ravens, because of the disparity in, as far as what it looked like on the field in those two games, have the Texans closed the gap? Have they become a team now? You expect Tank to play. Certainly he didn't play in the playoff game. With him around and the additions and the Ravens have lost coordinators and coaches, has the gap closed between the two? And then if the Cowboys – I think I'd be more interested in the Cowboys on a Sunday night than I would be if they played on Thanksgiving. Like, because that means the league has decided the Texans are must-watch. And they think they should be in prime time quite a bit. That would be the one I would hope for. Because sometimes the Cowboys like playing the Commanders on Thanksgiving. They play the Giants on Thanksgiving. They play a lot of teams who aren't very good on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I remember there's like a Raiders, like when the Raiders were bad, Cowboys-Raiders.
Yeah, don't put the Texans in that spot. It's like where you dump a bad team.
It's actually, now that I think about it, they kind of make it as much as they can the Cowboys homecoming game.
Pretty much.
Where it's like they get the team that's like expected to finish like third in the NFC East, and they're like, here you go.
Yeah. They give the Cowboys what they suspect would be an easy one. I don't want the Texans put in that position. Not that I think if they did, it would be an easy game for the Cowboys, but that's the spot for, hey, you want to get right, Cowboys? It's a short week. We're going to give you an opponent that we expect you to beat, it feels like, and the Texans wouldn't be that. So I hope that's a Sunday night game or a Monday night game.
I'm looking at the Cowboys' opponents, and they have a lot of good teams that I don't expect to be. They're not going to play, or I doubt that they play Baltimore, Cincinnati.
Those feel like Sunday night games.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
If they get that or treatment.
Obviously, Philadelphia. San Francisco, they could play them. But I feel like it'll be Tampa Bay or New Orleans. Or
a division rival.
Or a division, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the networks are going to want the Cowboys versus the Eagles on Monday or Sunday, or Fox might want to grab one of those, and then you'll have the rest, the Commanders. Hell, the Giants don't even have a quarterback to care about. So
Daniel Jones, come on.
As I said, the Giants don't even have a quarterback to care
about. Drew Lock, come on.
I'll repeat it as many times as you want. He can put his backpack on. His imaginary backpack on as much as he wants, Drew Lock. But the Giants didn't get to draft the quarterback because the Patriots said we're not letting you trade up. So it could be a Daniel Jones joint again as the Cowboys face their hated rival, the New York Giants. So me and Sean are kind of in agreement. Give me Ravens Chiefs at least as far as primetime games.
I'll be satisfied.
Anything else is gravy.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'll be satisfied with anything else as long as they do get to like three. Because if they only get two, I would be. It's a little bit of a slap in the face.
Disrespectful, slightly. Yes.
So, how do you feel about being the Chiefs? I guess not ring ceremony, but the Chiefs, you know, home opener kick NFL kickoff game.
Well, you get a lot of attention. You'll be the only game that matters. All the attention will
be
on that
game. That
yeah, yeah, certainly. It'll be the first game that Thursday night. I would welcome it. Now, we know the Chiefs aren't immune to losing. They lost to the Lions last year in that game, right?
Yeah.
So, I think if the Texans are facing the Chiefs, face them early.
With that Rashee Rice?
Possibly.
Possibly?
It's certainly possible.
Likely.
We'll get to the Rashee Rice thing when we come back now that Sean mentioned it. But it's possible. And and they have shown a willingness to go out and lose an opening night game, even with the Super Bowl banner being unfurled. So, and it makes a statement to the league that the Texans are here. So if that's the way it breaks down, great. I don't know that it will. But if it does, I'd welcome it. We'll talk about Rashee Rice when we come back. He's on a heater. And if you call trouble with the law, heat. And I think that's actually what it's called. So he's on a bit of a heater. We'll discuss that and more in the second hour. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.